Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and welcome to the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. This is a space for down-to-earth, honest conversations about what's really going on in your body in your 40s and how to support yourself through it. If you're feeling a bit out of sync, overwhelmed, or just not quite like yourself, you're in the right place. So let's get into today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode. I hope your week has started off well. I want to start this episode with something that I hear all the time, and that is women being told, oh, it's just perimenopause, whether they're talking to a friend, a doctor, a colleague, whoever it might be. And I just want to say that while that, of course, can be true, it's usually not, you know, it's not the full picture. Of course, we are, you know, once you're 40 plus or even late 30s onwards, you're in that phase of perimenopause. We've moved into it, just like if we were in puberty, we're in puberty. If we're postmenopause, we're postmenopause. So yes, it's a phase that we are in at a certain stage in our life, but we can't just say everything that we're dealing with is just perimenopause, because it just isn't the full picture. So if you've ever felt something like, you know, something that doesn't quite add up, you've got these new symptoms, your body's changing, something feels off, then, you know, you're not imagining it. You're not alone either. And we don't want to just say, this is just perimenopause. Now, I do want to be really clear. Perimenopause, of course, brings change. That's the whole idea, for example, of why I even have this podcast, why I do the work that I do, because perimenopause brings change. Hormones are fluctuating. Things can feel more unpredictable. Your body can start responding in ways that it didn't before. And I'm experiencing this myself. But what I see over and over again, both personally and in my private practice with clients, is that we've sort of gone too far the other way. We've gone from not talking about perimenopause and menopause at all to now blaming everything on it, and also blaming everything on it and stopping there. Oh, it's just perimenopause. Oh, okay. So I'll just get on with it then. It's just perimenopause. And when we do that, we miss so much. Because the thing is, as I said, you know, we wouldn't just say, oh, it's just puberty. You know, don't worry about it. Oh, it's just because you're stressed. Don't worry about it. So why do we do that here? You are not just a phase. You are not now just this perimenopausal woman. It's not just about the phase that you're in. It's about who that person is that's going through it. So you're a whole person. I'm a whole person with our own health history, our own lifestyle, our own biology, and all of those things shape how we experience perimenopause. All of your symptoms are connected. They don't just come out of nowhere. They're shaped by your whole body, your history, your lifestyle, your stress levels, your nutrition, your unique biology. So in this episode, I want to walk you through some of the most common things that I see that are being overlooked when women are told it's just perimenopause. And that's not to overwhelm you, hopefully not at all, but to help you understand what might actually be going on underneath the hood, underneath the surface. So let's start with something that comes up again and again and is really so foundational, and that's blood sugar. Because unstable blood sugar throughout the day, levels that are going up and down and up and down and not fluctuating within the ideal range, can drive symptoms like anxiety, your energy crashes, feeling sort of tired in the morning, even though you've had what you class to be enough sleep, irritability, night sweats, hot flushes. And usually these sorts of symptoms get labeled as hormonal, but, you know, to do with estrogen, progesterone. And of course, as much as they are linked to changes in estrogen and progesterone, blood sugar and hormones and these sorts of symptoms are significantly connected. So for example, if you're not eating enough protein, if you're skipping breakfast or other meals, if you're having a breakfast that's low in protein, if you're relying on caffeine, your body is constantly trying to stabilize blood sugar levels throughout the day. And that creates a lot of stress internally. And therefore, that can start to drive those symptoms, energy crashes, irritability, anxiety, night sweats, hot flushes, sleep issues, and so on. And also physical symptoms like weight gain, particularly around the middle, that we might be confused about at this stage of life. And the next piece is gut health. This one is so important because your gut plays a role in how you process and clear out your hormones, particularly estrogen. So if your gut health isn't optimal, you can end up, for example, recirculating hormones, particularly estrogen. So used estrogen that should be, once we use it, once the cells use it and do what they need to do with it, we need to lose it. It needs to leave the body permanently. But if our gut health isn't working very well, and we're not, for example, having very good daily, at least once a day, bowel movements, then we can be recirculating those used estrogens back up into the body, and that will be causing, more intense symptoms of perimenopause. We could be then dealing with more inflammation as well when gut health isn't as good as it should be, and just generally feeling more symptomatic overall. But also things like bloating, sluggish digestion, irregular bowel movements, reflux. These aren't separate issues. They're all part of the picture as well. And we would directly link those to gut health. But having a gut that isn't working very well, or digestion that isn't working very well, same thing, then it can just generally make us feel more symptomatic. And if we are increasing inflammation because of, compromised gut health, then inflammation also drives lots of symptoms, including aches and pains, joint aches and pains, muscle aches and pains, headaches, fatigue, just generally feeling under par. And then we have thyroid. So this is a big one. So many women have their thyroid checked, they're told everything's normal, but usually what's just being measured in those tests is TSH. Thyroid stimulating hormone. I've talked about this before in previous episodes, specifically about thyroid, but TSH is a signaling hormone from the brain. It's not actually telling us how much active thyroid hormone that we're making and that our cells are receiving. Your body goes on to, after getting the signal from TSH from the brain, the thyroid gland goes on to produce T4, which is actually an inactive hormone, and that T4 that the thyroid gland produces then needs to be converted, which happens in the rest of the body, like the liver and the gut, for example, into a hormone called T3. This is the active hormone that your cells actually use. So if those systems that convert T4 into T3 aren't functioning well, then we're not going to be able to convert much of our T4 into the active hormone T3 that does all the jobs. So we're not getting what we need at that sort of cellular level, even though our TSH could look completely normal. So that's where we really want to make sure we're getting TSH, free T4 and free T3 tested when we're getting our thyroid checked. I hear this all the time. Clients will say, they'll even email me, before sessions and say, I've had my thyroid checked, it's all normal. Or they'll say to me in a form, in their intake form, or on our first session, I've had my thyroid checked, it's all normal. And then I'll say, well, what did you get tested? More often than not, they don't even realize, they don't know what's been tested. They've just been told by their doctor that their thyroid is normal. Or they may say, oh, I had my TSH tested and it was normal. Or they might say, I've had my TSH and my T4 and it was normal. Again, what's normal? Because, I would personally, as a practitioner, want to see what that number actually is, to see if it's optimally normal or just, lack of it, just optimal levels of TSH and T4 basically are very different to your standard wide reference ranges, which are just looking essentially for the absence of disease, the absence of problems. So I would want to see what that number is so I can interpret it myself through a functional medicine lens. But also, if they haven't had T3 tested, again, it doesn't give us that full picture. And then there's the autoimmune piece, which usually isn't tested at all. So this is when we test for two specific thyroid-related antibodies to see if there's any autoimmunity going on against the thyroid gland. That's usually a big driver for underactive thyroid. And sometimes, again, if we're just looking at TSH, T3, T4, we're not testing the autoimmune piece, we're missing that as well. Now let's talk about stress, because stress in your 40s is very different to stress in your 20s, even early 30s. Your body, 40 plus, my body, is less resilient. Our resources are lower, and our nervous system feels the impact more. It feels the impact more from things like rushing, overworking, multitasking, constantly being on, overgiving, saying yes when we want to say no, being everything to everyone, having messages coming at us from all different platforms on our phone, on our watches, on our, you know, computers. They start to show up more clearly in your symptoms. So what you used to be able to push through now really does just push back. And that includes certain exercise, how often we exercise, how much we exercise, how long we exercise for, and the type of exercise we're doing. I hear so many women saying, you know, I used to be able to do 4 spin classes a week, and I was up at 5 a.m. doing this, that, and the other, going for runs. And now I am so depleted when I try to do those things. And that is, again, because our system is very, very different in our 40s compared to how it was in our 20s and even early 30s. So that's definitely something to look at. And then the next thing that I see all the time is underfueling and nutrient depletion. Women are trying to eat well, but they usually unknowingly undereating. So by accident, they're undereating, underfueling. So they're skipping meals, or maybe they're extending their fasting overnight, and they're eating their breakfast very late, so 10, 11 o'clock. They're eating very lightly, so just a very light salad, for example, for lunch, or they're not properly nourishing themselves. And I also see very small dinners, very, you know, healthy in inverted commas on paper, or clean, I should say, in inverted commas, you know, a piece of fish, some steamed vegetables, and kind of usually that, you know, that's it, maybe a couple of potatoes. But again, very small, light meals. And your body needs more support during this time, not less. It needs more protein. It needs more good fats. It needs more fiber. It probably needs more carbohydrates than you're actually giving it. And then underfueling can start to impact hormone production, hormone stability, blood sugar stability, energy, mood, sleep. And I see this all the time. Women saying they keep waking up multiple times in the night. They can't fall back to sleep. And when I look at somebody's food diary, for example, when people first come to me, they'll complete a health history form, and I'll usually ask for just a snapshot of 3 days of what they eat. And they will often say that they skip carbs at dinner because, you know, somebody told them, or they read somewhere that's the worst time to eat carbohydrates. Your body will just store them as fat. You know, you're just going to sit on the sofa afterwards or go to bed, and it's the worst time to eat carbs. So they tend to have very low or no carb dinners. So like I said, just a piece of fish or meat with some vegetables or salad and no actual carbohydrates. When these women start to put about a fist size serving of a nice complex carbohydrate, potato, regular potato, baby knee potato, sweet potato, whatever it is, brown rice, they start to notice that they're sleeping better. And it's usually quite instant. If I ever accidentally, which I very rarely do, but if I ever accidentally have an evening meal that does not contain about a fist size serving of carbohydrate, I can't sleep. I'll always wake up around 2 or 3, just can't sleep. And that's usually because my blood sugar's dropped from that lack of carbohydrate that I had with that evening meal. So that's a big one. And all of these, yeah, this nutrient depletion, under eating, it really impacts everything. So it's definitely a place to look. And then sleep. Sleep becomes even more important during this phase, like it would in puberty. You know, we're going through a phase where the body really does require more nervous system support and more sleep support and a more support for our circadian rhythm, that internal body clock. We almost need to go back to, you know, when we were young toddlers and babies. And if we have our own children, we don't just sort of, you know, what we give those children is routine. They usually wake up at the same time every day and they go to sleep at the same time every night. And we have a wind down routine for them to get them ready to fall into a nice deep sleep. and they have a nice routine when they wake up. And that's what we really need. That's what the body really wants and craves in perimenopause. And it's not just about how many hours of sleep that you get. It's about that rhythm, as I said. So if your body clock's out of sync because of late nights, screen exposure up until bedtime, bright lights up until bedtime, scrolling online up until bedtime, having WhatsApp conversations or serious conversations at home, irregular routines, no wind down routine, you know, not having natural daylight first thing in the morning and so on, it starts to disrupt cortisol, which then affects everything else. And it's just this kind of knock-on domino effect down to all other systems and symptoms associated with perimenopause. So that's like, you know, again, another example of where we can't just chalk, you know, or anxiety or fatigue, hot flushes, whatever it might be, oh, it's just perimenopause. There's all these other things to consider that would be making these symptoms more intense or even making them show up in the first place, despite the fact that, yes, you're in perimenopause. But if we could actually work on these different areas, maybe one of them, maybe a few of them, maybe two of them, then we could actually eliminate many of our symptoms, but at least, if anything, bring down their intensity. And so these are just, you know, this is a, hopefully really does show you how we can't just say it's just perimenopause. We need to look at all these different areas as well. I also want to touch on HRT here. I've done an episode a couple of weeks ago where I've talked about HRT a little bit more because this is where nuance is really important. HRT can be incredibly supportive for some women, but it's not just about the hormones themselves. It's about the body that those hormones are going into. So I am taking progesterone and a small amount of estrogen, and I have talked about this on previous episodes. So I'm going to be 47 on my next birthday. And I have historically, for many years now, where I have been doing lots of consistent testing on my hormones, not just blood work, you know, getting a snapshot of estrogen randomly, but actual tracking my estrogen levels in my cycle over years, I have found that my estrogen is low. And that just seems to be a consistent theme for me. So, and then about a year ago, I had some really debilitating symptoms that were very much for me linked to low estrogen. They were also being driven by a very stressful period I was going through and some various other things, which I was working on at the time, but I also needed to have a conversation with my menopause specialist doctor, and we decided that we would put in a small amount of estrogen for me just to give me that support along with some progesterone because I have, you know, suspicion that I'm not ovulating very well anymore and I'm still having very regular cycles, but I'm just not making enough progesterone each month for me to feel the calming sleep support, nervous system support effects from them. But I'm also very aware that it's not just about the hormone themselves, it's about the body that they're going into. So things like gut health, liver function, your ability to detoxify those used hormones and metabolize them properly, thyroid health, inflammation levels, stress levels, all of these different things, my sleep, all influence how well HRT works. So I'm always focused on those areas. I always have been, obviously, as a nutritional therapist since 2013, of course, those things are at the forefront of my mind all the time. And I live and breathe, you know, looking after all of these different systems of my body, but I'm also not a robot. So, you know, where I decided to put HRT in, I also make that conscious effort even more so to make sure that my gut health is always optimized and my liver is getting the support that it needs to break down these hormones, whether I've made them myself or they're coming in through HRT, to break them down, metabolize them well, that I'm focusing on my circadian rhythm, I'm focusing on my stress levels, my nervous system support, my sleep, I'm making sure inflammation is under control, all of these different things. And that's why what works for one woman doesn't always work for another. So there's plenty of women that will say, I tried HRT and it was awful. You know, I started to experience all these different symptoms and so on. So I just stopped it. And it might have been the right thing to do to just stop it. But we can never compare our HRT experience with other women because it's the body that HRT is going into, not necessarily the hormones themselves. So I just wanted to touch on that. The last thing I wanted to say here is even symptoms like hot flushes and night sweats, yes, they're linked to hormonal changes. So we do often say, oh, she's 47, she's 48, having hot flushes, experiencing night sweats, it's just perimenopause. Because we do know that low estrogen and fluctuating estrogen, so even when estrogen's still high, where it's erratic in perimenopause, that can bring on hot flushes and night sweats. So yes, they're linked to that, but they're also influenced and often intensified by things like blood sugar instability, stress, nervous system dysregulation, alcohol, and hydration. So again, it's not just one thing. It's not just hormones. It's not just perimenopause. We have to look at other things as well. We have to look at our symptoms as, they're communicating. It's your body communicating. They're not just random. So when we just say, oh, it's just perimenopause, we really can be missing the bigger picture. We usually are. We need to consider the phase, of course, but support the person going through that phase, not just the phase, you know, blanket. What do we do for perimenopause? We need to support the person going through it. So perimenopause matters, but it doesn't define everything. Your individual biology and your life context matter just as much. In fact, probably even more so. So it's not just about the phase you're in. It's your body, your health history, your lifestyle history, your trauma history, everything, the life that phase is happening within, the body that phase is happening within. And when we start to listen to the symptoms and understand they're not just random, that they're the body communicating, when we start to listen and look a little deeper at them, we can actually do something about them. So you're not at the mercy of this transition, this phase. There's so much you can do to support your body through it, but it starts with moving away from a one-size-fits-all approach, and that includes a one-size-fits-all approach for maybe HRT as well, and starting to understand you and your body. So if this resonated with you, I'd really encourage you to listen back, to take note of what stood out in terms of different, you know, areas of health, foundational areas, maybe blood sugar, maybe you're skipping breakfast, maybe you're overdoing it on the exercise piece, maybe you know you're not eating enough protein, maybe you are skipping carbs at dinner, and just start to get curious about your own body and symptoms and seeing where intuitively you know you could make a little tweak, a little change, and it can bring, you know, some relief. And if you want support with that, of course, we can explore working together one-to-one. I've got my perimenopause health assessment, which you can just find on the homepage of my website. It's also going to be linked in the show notes. That is a great place to start. For most women, that's all they need. I just take a deep dive into their health history. We look at their food diary. We're looking at everything, their nervous system, their sleep, their thyroid, their blood sugar, all of it. And really deep diving into seeing what little tweaks you can make to go away with and really start to improve your symptoms, your experience, but also safeguard your mental, emotional, and physical health throughout this transition, not just now, but in the long term as well. And don't forget, you can take my free perimenopause quiz if you'd like a bit more personalized insight into what your body might need right now the most. So it will tell you, you know, do you need to focus on blood sugar more? Do you need to focus on liver support or sleep, circadian rhythm, nervous system, gut health, and so on. So I'll link to that in the show notes for you as well. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. Do let me know if you've got any questions, anything that you'd like me to talk about in more detail. This episode obviously just kind of whizzed through all of the different reasons, the different areas that we need to look at, not just looking at perimenopause itself. I have many previous episodes that go into more detail about everything, but if you have a specific question, please do reach out, drop me an email, drop me a DM on Instagram, and let me know. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time. Bye-bye. If you enjoyed this episode and you're wanting a bit more support, there's a few ways I can help you. You can take my free perimenopause quiz, join my Midlife Thrive membership, or work with me one-to-one. And I'll leave all the details in the show notes. And if this episode resonated, I'd love you to share it with someone who might need to hear it too. Thank you so much for being here. It really means a lot. And I'll see you in the next episode.